Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
overuse of icons as an aid to learning. So when I talk about icons, I talk about when you're teaching about certain things, you will talk about someone's law or a famous person, and there's a certain use for that because you can actually park someone's understanding with a famous person and then come back and build up the understanding later. But what often happens is that people just don't do that. They just talk about Newton's laws and just leave it like that. Or and this all started off when I was looking and marking HSC exams, and I came across a real doozy of a question which really misinterpreted in a profound way Einstein's photoelectric effect, in just an unbelievably profound way. I began to research into that and research the teaching and everything which led to that, and that was believing Einstein was an icon, an image, a holder for ideas, and not actually ever developing things beyond that. So what's recently happened is that I've been struggling with how to actually teach scales of the universe, and I've sort of re-engineered that with sort of a tongue-in-cheek talking of the Peterverse and the Hillerverse for different key scales, where this is a place marker just so that people can say, well, I don't understand that, but I can understand this, and go across. And what I wanted to say is that we come across, I happen to be reading about this Japanese person who's setting up to fight the Australians and the British up at Malaya, and he's about to whip our ass. It's late 1941 and early 1942, Singapore was going to fall in just a few short months. It's sort of insane watching, but listening to it, his sort of thinking, when you really analyse it, is again on this icon thinking. He thinks of the samurai icon and different icons as placeholders, and he actually doesn't really get to grips with some key ideas. And again, this icon thinking can actually stop us actually thinking deeply or questioning things. And one of the things for sure is that if you really look at public schooling and the bells and the regimentation and the sort of paramilitary aspects of schools, the respect, the standing up, and calling people sir and officers and all that type of stuff, and dare I say, people can go overboard and have national flags, getting people to sing the national anthem and salute flags and all that type of stuff in schools. You have to say, is that essential to education, or is this people following up on placeholders or icons or analogies? Is the analogy actually crossed over into the actual thinking space, and people have not actually got the difference between the qualities, human qualities, and the actual flag which represents those qualities? Have they actually short-circuited and just said, follow the flag, follow the nationalism, follow the rules? And this is a sort of a wake-up call as I went through, and as I researched different people who are key to learning in school. And so a key person, obviously, in science is the invention of the word scientist, and how we came up with the idea of scientists and what people were trying to solve. They were trying to solve an educational problem by creating a career path which was open to all members of society, not to the natural philosophers, which are the sort of the landed people sitting up on the estate. It was something that for all people to be involved in, and a lot of it, the scientists was named, who invented the word scientist, was invented by a poet. It wasn't invented by a poet, it was invented by a religious person from Cambridge, Father, or the Reverend Wewall, is that his name? I happen to remember Wewall, and he was the PR person around the phenomena that was Faraday, and Faraday embodied all the noble Christian values of the Victorian era, as opposed to the excess, the generosity and kindness and clarity of thought and the stoicism, the stuff that we have sort of lumped into what a scientist is. This was showcased by Reverend Wewald, who came up with the term scientist. So we have the teaching of science, the theory of science, but it really goes back to a whole stage play that was happening around 1836 to 1864, and it ended with Faraday himself going into education, seeing his view as an educator, but also seeing on some key education reforms that were sweeping through Britain. But these education reforms were on the back of an organisation which came up from Frederick the Great. So the Frederick the Great story I will tell in a little. So Frederick the Great's father was the King of Prussia. Frederick the Great was Prussian. And Frederick the Great was gay. Inasmuch that... I suppose he was definitely gay. He had a male lover and was going to leave the border of Prussia to the court of Louis the whatever it was back then. I can't remember, there's so many Louis. It was a Louis. He was running a dam-fined court, and he was going to go across, and he was caught by the border's police, and the two of them were taken back to the father, and so the father, to punish him, to show him that this was unacceptable, executed the male lover in front of him. And of course, this mixed him up, Frederick the Great, up enormously, and he put him into military school. And of course, when Frederick the Great came along, he was off fighting all these different wars, and nearly about to lose them, but the correct people died at Russia at the right time. But in the meantime, he started off educating the entire populace and basically introduced some of the police state aspects. So there's basically a few welfare issues in there and a few madness issues in there, and the idea... So basically the police state was... basically taken over from the religious police state, so the religious people were running a bit of police state, so he got that going. So look, this is just from my research, I'm just writing it, I was sort of saying this as a comeback. So there's importance in that there's no real strong evidence of Frederick the Great being hooked up in this icon viewpoint, but there is evidence, which is sort of a bit. Oh, it would sound so flaky. There is a classic 70s movie called The Bunker. I think it has Alec Guinness in it, and it has this small byline. So this Hitler's bunker, and looking at the last, I think it's called The Last Days of the Bunker, or just maybe called The Last Days, or maybe called The Bunker. But in it they have this scene of Hitler on the last day praying to a picture of none other than Frederick the Great. And then the telephone person says goodbye to Hitler, though. Commits suicide, and he goes through this scene of cutting up the picture, rolling it up, and escaping to Berlin, but not as we know it, and eventually going around with it. And sort of this is, if you're an icon person, saying, well, look, this is someone who's clearly involved in the icon. You research a bit more and you find out that this person was no ordinary telephonist. He was very much liked by Hitler, and he did indeed say that it was all his testament that he did do it, and that Hitler used to go around flying in his Junker, flying around the place with a special seat reserved for this picture of Frederick the Great, and Hitler really liked Frederick the Great, and this telephone operator had to organise. As you research it more, what had happened is that in the invasion of Poland, this I think it would have been possibly SS, one doesn't know, but he was had negotiated with the Polish people, and he was walking back from the truce, and he was shot in the back and wounded, and this was an intensely vital piece of information for some reason for Hitler, and he was an art person, and so he got a job as being a telephonist, or the telephone operator for Hitler, and interviewed, he said Hitler, in his hearing, never lost his temper, was always very, very polite and cordial to him throughout the entire war. So it just goes to show that there's all these stories embedded in. But indeed, he did actually say, I can confirm that this did happen. I did chance upon him and see him do this. And so this information was recorded once, but we had this freak time. You can imagine picking up someone at, on 2013, I think it was, and being able to confirm all of this. So I don't know whether this is all necessarily true, but I'm pretty sure that Hitler was looking at the icon of Frederick Gate and the vision of Germany from Frederick Bay. But I'm sure he perhaps didn't know the full stories, the motivations, the richness of what was going on. And this sort of just goes on, that the cult of personality that a lot of people, followed him, but also hated him, and it was all about Hitler himself had also become an icon, which couldn't be questioned, couldn't be reasoned with, and had to be completely destroyed. So this my overall view is that this process of looking at a label has to be very carefully looked at, that if you decide that I'm going to talk about a label of nationalism or a label of this or that, it inevitably leads to more and more low quality, insane thinking. So I would say, I mean, I'm not in a position to criticize all that much, but I would say that that wasn't necessarily the highest level of open academic thinking going at that stage, but nor was it for the whole world on all sides got swept up by this icon thinking. And I can see it happening at the moment in terms of the cult of personality. What I have to say with Trump, in terms of that I am special, I am my own icon, and America is an icon, and the actual quality of thinking is not necessarily there. And the ability to have one of the things with an icon, a picture, it doesn't speak. It's just there, and it is a placeholder for legitimate thought, which is really necessary for agile education. So it's the idea of actually introducing the icon, but saying, look, this is only an icon, it will be removed later and substituted with real understanding. But people who don't have the real understanding, they just teach teach via the icon. So I wrote a fairly comprehensive research paper analysing this HSC question, arguing that, and looking at the actual iconography, which has been embedded into science education. The scientist is an icon. The top scientists are icons, but essentially the theory and machinery is there independent of it. And you can see that a healthy approach in science can be a healthy approach in general for our view. If you actually look at the way people dispose of inconvenient science arguments like global warming, things like that, people really push against it. So I'll finish this podcast and go in. I'm just looking up now at the moon shining through some clouds, and it's really interesting to see the light scattering effect. There's sort of I think it's actually my scattering, because just looking at the angle, so the moon is shining through the clouds, but it's illuminating a circular patch about 3 lunar radiuses. So there's the moon, and there's enough width for the moon either side. So it's 3 or 9 times or 10 times the size of the moon in terms of just illumination on the outside of that. It's a classic. Look, I can see now more colours. I can see reds and greens in there. That's my scattering. It's amazing the number of people who just cannot see the colours, because they're just not programmed to see it, which is sort of rather going back to the idea of the icon teaching, that people are so much taught on icons and tested on icons that and optimised for icon teaching. We sort of teach people to be optimised as icon producers. That is, they have an artistic picture of the moon, and that's it. And it means that when they look around at nature, they only see a certain amount of things. So that's my rant, so to speak, on icons. And it's definite food for thought. It's food for thought when you're looking at this person. There are limits of his. This is the Japanese person who's about to, as I'm reading through, is about to absolutely paste the Australian soldiers. Just, it's unthinkable what he's going to do. But there's many aspects to his personality, the way that he lived his life in a narrow fashion, and the way that people think in a very narrow, warlike historical way. But actually, it's not so much the actual content of what they think, it's the method of what they think. They think in terms of equating actions and reasons with the placeholders or the icons of it, which I think is something that we can well learn in the way that we teach and the way that we conduct our political actions. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.